Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
An Erio's original.
For Koreans, like in like my family, like something always is gonna, like around the corner, something's gonna,
yes.
Like they're always thinking of something bad.
Koreans, just us as just historically, we're used to horrors, you know, happening to us.
Hi, this is Margaret Cho. You're listening to The Margaret Cho. Today we have a great episode with Randall Park, who is the incredible star of Fresh Off the Boat. And we recorded this before all of the events of May and the murder of George Floyd. But I'm really excited to talk to him. And yeah, he's an amazing guy. Enjoy the episode.
What was your favorite sitcom when you were a kid growing up, do you think?
Sanford and Son. Yeah, I mean, just
so funny.
Hands down.
So funny.
Growing up, yeah.
So funny. Bum, bum, bwada. Bum, bum, bwada, 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 bwada. Bum, bum, bwada. Now, it's like, there's so many things. I love it because it was a junkyard.
It was a junkyard in South Central LA.
Lamont was so handsome.
Lamont was amazing, yeah.
And really doting, like got quite a lovely son, you know, really.
Oh, great son.
Very devoted.
Really devoted.
And then LaWanda Page, right?
LaWanda Page, yes, Aunt Esther.
She was actually his opening, Red Fox's opening act on the road.
Yeah, I read about that. I read about that, which is just so, I mean, yeah, the history there.
They would tour together on like, so I imagine like on the weekends, they would go and do comedy. I remember on the weekend, one weekend, and I was always too young to go see them do comedy. They would mm-hmm. come and do shows in San Francisco like on Friday and Saturday night. I know that they did. I remember them playing like USF. Mm-hmm. Like a university mm-hmm. show with LaWanda would do like the opening slot and then Red Fox would do the closing slot. And then I did some sort of event much later and it was the Royal Family or some show like that. It was after Sanford and Son and it was
with Red Fox?
With Red Fox. But
oh,
he had actually married his wife. I think it was like his third or fourth wife at the time.
Korean,
was Korean.
Right?
She was Korean.
Yeah, that's right. That's
she was really Korean, like from Korea. She wore a hanbok and everything, like real Korean.
I remember seeing photos of that.
she was real Korean.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But I think his comedy was very, very racy. It was very dirty.
So racy. I got a bunch of his albums, and yeah, he was really dirty, really, I mean, I don't know. I just loved, I was such a big Red Fox fan, you know.
So funny.
And that show, and you know, Pat Morita was on that show, playing mm-hmm. Lamont's friend, and towards the end of Pat Morita's life, I met him, and the first things I asked him was about Sanford and Son, and about his relationship with Red Fox, and he told me how he just kind of discovered Pat Morita and kind of mm-hmm. took him under his wing. And he's the one who kind of got him out there into the world, you know, as far as comedy is concerned. And I was like, oh, that is so cool.
It's so cool. They must have really laughed on that set thinking about that. Like, I mean, that then there's Grady. Who plays Grady?
His name was Whitman Mayo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. great character actor. I remember there was a children's show that I grew up when I was a kid, and he was on the children's show. He was like, it was just him talking to camera. I don't remember the name of the show, but he was just this great character actor. And there was a period in Sanford and Son when when Red Fox was having a dispute with the network over like pay, and he left. For like a season, I think, a whole season. And Whitman Mayo, kind of his character took over for basically like became Lamont's kind of surrogate while Fred was like out of town. And yes. And I remember, those episodes were fantastic, you know, even without Red Fox. And I was like, yeah, because this guy is just also equally so great.
Yeah. It was a very adult show for a sitcom. I mean, it was like very hard hitting. It was probably, I imagine, kind of a late night show. Like it was one of those sitcoms that was a 9:30 or 9 o'clock.
Probably, yeah. I mean, a lot of that stuff they probably wouldn't even air now. You know, like there's some episodes I'm just like, wow, they really went there.
Yeah. It was really very dirty and really, but it was so funny. And I think that, LaWanda Page was always really hilarious, and his interactions with her and constant fighting with her was really funny.
Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Because LaWanda Page played the sister of his wife who passed away, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was that backstory between their characters.
And, because he was always threatening that he was going to be with her. You know, like he was always saying that he was dying.
He's like, I'm coming.
Yeah, I'm coming to be with you.
Yeah.
And then it was like the running joke was like something that was going to happen to him, and or like that he's seen the ugliest thing and then she would always appear. She would always show up.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
It was like all ugly, ugly, ugly jokes, and then she would like walk in.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah,
just really it perfect. So it was so
and
funny.
You know who was a writer on that show? Like it was one of his first like TV writing gigs. Was Gary Shandling.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's Gary Shandling's show, which is his sitcom. His first kind of sitcom is like my like other like all time favorite sitcom.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The one that was not Larry Sanders.
Not Larry Sanders, though I love Larry Sanders too, but it was before Larry Sanders, and it was a multi-camera sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
But he would break the fourth wall and basically like be talking to the audience.
Yeah.
And like literally like when he would like leave the house, he would step into like a golf cart and drive to the other side of the set, mm-hmm. as if it was like a real car. And you could just see the inner workings of how this show worked.
Yeah.
You know, how sitcoms work. And right. they would just play with that. And it was so playful and so just ahead of its time. And actually, they've never done anything like that even since. And I remember just being so like mesmerized by that show. Just like, oh my gosh, this is what it's like to do a sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really mesmerizing. I mean, yeah, Gary Shandling, what a great, I mean, he was so funny. And I really idolized his comedy. And did you know him at all?
No, I never knew him. I was, I idolized him too. I was like such a fan. Yeah.
He was such a, I really loved the Larry Sanders show too.
Me too.
Yeah.
So great.
So great and so funny and so, just so interesting and just, you know, like kind of dark. Also, like kind of that weird
dark,
90s thing of like, we like to look inside of show business and see what's happening underneath.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was another glimpse into late night. And I was big on late night too, just as a kid growing up. I just like loved just comedy and those late night talk shows. You know, Carson was, that's when I, you know, was really obsessed with it during Carson. And So the Larry Sanders Show was, yeah, another glimpse into like, oh, this is how it works. This
yeah.
is fascinating.
It yeah. is. It's yeah. definitely very interesting. And yeah, I didn't know that Gary Shandling was a writer on that, but on Sanford and Son. But that, I guess it makes sense. It does make sense. The tone of it, the feeling of it, like the sounds of it, you know, I guess so. Yeah. yeah. It does definitely yeah. make sense. That's funny.
Yeah. 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 Isn't it wild? It's
That's
so wild.
Cool. I yeah. also, I love Good Times a lot too.
Oh, I loved Good Times.
Good Times was really great.
Raj rerun.
No. That's yeah. That's what's happening.
Oh, what's that? We were talking about what's happening is great too, though. Good Time. Oh, Good Time. JJ.
Good Time is JJ and Thelma and Wilona and Florida.
Wilona, the neighbor. Yeah, Florida. that was a classic sitcom.
But all of those, like, did it give you sort of a training on how to sort of like, I do see glimpses of sitcom dad in your performances. You know, like, I do see, like, the. I guess the ancestry.com of it, like you know,
yeah,
when
yeah,
you're
yeah,
like
yeah.
playing a television dad, you do have to have some of the genealogy of television dads in you, you know, like I think yeah. that's important.
Yeah, I think I grew up on sitcoms and I grew up in front of a television and sitcoms were my favorite. And literally when I was a kid. I had this little micro cassette recorder mm-hmm. and I would put it up against the TV whenever I Love Lucy would air reruns mm-hmm. of I Love Lucy mm-hmm. and the Dick Van Dyke Show. And I would just audio record it.
Yeah.
And then at night, like while in bed, I would just like play and I would listen to, you know, these sitcoms with the audience, the laughter of the audience. And it was just, I don't know, something about it was so comforting to me. Yeah, it just kind of became this big kind of part of me, I guess. I just loved it. I just loved the format and yeah, and these characters and the sitcom family and the dad and you know, those are all just like kind of traditions, American mm-hmm. kind of traditions that mm-hmm. I really kind of held on to.
Yeah, I mean, it's really yeah. it's exciting. And I think but it's interesting though. I wonder what the difference of like playing it in the single cam versus the multicam. And I guess what people like when the traditional sitcoms that we're talking about usually like were filmed in front of a live studio audience, which means yeah. they're almost like shot like a play would be shot in that, yeah, you like, know, you're performing yeah. the show in front of people, almost like, you know, you're doing sketches in front of an audience. So mm-hmm. there it's in sequence and then you're doing it. But your show, Fresh Off the Boat, was shot mostly on, you know, you of course on the set, but yeah, not in front of an audience. So it was
yeah,
a different
and on
kind
location.
Of feel. Yeah, and on location, yeah, yeah. So it was a different feel. It's
more like a movie in that,
yeah.
in that sense.
Yeah.
yeah, but I think tonally, though, the show kind of was a little bigger than kind of grounded real life. So mm-hmm. it kind of felt like, even though it was a single camera show, it felt like we were able to push a little bit, you know.
Definitely.
Just like, yeah, yeah. And which was fun. Which
yeah.
was a lot of fun. I mean, it wasn't multicam. I love multicam. I mean, your show was a multicam.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I just love the energy of those, mm-hmm. you know, and the audience laughter. It's just so fun.
Like what you guys were doing was, it really reminded me of Happy Days, actually. Speaking of Pat Morita.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Pat, that's right.
It's
that's
very
right.
Happy Days, which is like, yeah. it cuts the balance between going in like, in a cinematic direction,
yeah.
but also fitting the bill of like this being like a family comedy, which is really exciting.
Yeah, yeah, and able to kind of, yeah, just push it just a little bit, you know, and you could have your big characters and you mm-hmm. could have your, you know, you could have your, but then there's those grounded moments too. I mean, I think even with multi-camera sitcoms, I love the multi-camera sitcoms where, yeah, things could get serious here and, you know,
yeah.
like Good Times. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the Good Times did that a lot. And a lot of the Norman Lear ones, you know, they kind of had some scenes that were just dramatic. And I always thought that was so cool.
Well, yeah, it got really dramatic. I mean, they would get, Norman Lear would get into really you know, I think he was very one of those originators of the sort of social justice, morality play kinds of, like, he really wanted to present things that were not really present in comedy at that point, you know, whether it was racism or class struggle or, you know, things like that, or abuse, or I remember there was a lot of things like when they introduced the Janet Jackson character in Good Times, it was all about how she had been abused and she was leaving this abusive home and going into being adopted by Willona.
Yeah.
And it was very, very heavy.
Yeah, and it's powerful when, especially in that format, because you're just so used to just laughing and having fun, and then all of a sudden, whoa. You're like, you know, you're like disarmed, and then they kind of tell you the real. You know?
Yeah. It's really amazing how you know, the audience would be really alarmed, and it was really powerful to use. Or you know, when Willona would be yelling at somebody, then, you know, audiences, we get this sort of cathartic release where it's sort of like, oh, this whole thing is like happening, and you feel like really triumphant, you know? Yeah. So I think it's really powerful. And you would get that during All in the Family too. Like, you get you know, when people would be like yelling at, you know, Archie Bunker or whoever, you know, like there was always that sense of like this righteous thing happening.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I don't know. I guess I mean, I'm not too up on like the modern day multi-camera sitcoms. I wonder if they're doing that. I have no idea.
I haven't really watched it. There's quite a lot of that on like the reboot of One Day at a Time. That's the one multicam that I definitely see that has sort of a lot of the kind of like sort of throwback elements.
Well, and that's Norman Lear, right? Mm-hmm. That's a Norman Lear show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see that.
And then you have somebody like Rita Moreno, who's very used to that kind of, she has that sort of grandeur of, she has that, you know, the legacy aspect of, you know, who she is. Then she's sort of bringing that, and she sort of informs her performance and her character with, you know, all of the history of, you know, what she's done. So that's a cool thing, too.
Yeah, that is. That's super cool. I'm glad shows like that are still around.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm pretty sure it's like an American thing. It's like jazz. It's like it was made in America. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, I hope they keep going and they innovate and they evolve. And because I just love it so much.
I know.
Like theater. It's like theater.
Yeah. It is. I was trying to think of like what kinds of like, Asian American, what kind of like film genres, what we can do in like, you know, like I love to watch Korean movies, and, you know, Korean movies are really all about revenge. And we sort of perfected the social class warfare thing with Parasite. You know, so we've moved from revenge to like social class horrors. So I wonder if there's like, there's some sort of like Asian American equivalent. I don't know if there's like Asian American. Well, there's Asian American horror, like Better Luck Tomorrow. That's a great one.
That was a great movie.
I love that movie. That movie really freaks me out. Like, it really is. It's 20 years old now.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
I can't believe it's 20 years old, but it's also like, it's just as powerful, you know, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful film. And it actually ages very, very well. It really, really holds up. But, you know, I think that there's so much in the horror genre that we can relate to. Like, I was thinking about movies like Us and Get Out.
Oh, Get Out.
Because there's so much anxiety within the African American community in terms of othering. Yeah. I really do feel like there's so much of that in the Asian American community as well that's untapped.
Oh, for sure.
That's good to of like think about. But, you know, that sort of cathartic release is there in horror for the African American community. So I don't know exactly
It's a great way. Yeah, horror is such a great way to like examine kind of social issues, I feel like. And there is just, you know, our community is just rich with social issues. You
and
know,
horror. So many like, things. And also, Asian people really love a ghost story. I don't know if
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't like horror.
You don't?
No, I don't. I mean, it's hard to get me to watch it.
Oh, really?
Once I watch it, I could really like love it, but I'll never want to see it again. Oh, okay. You know, like The Shining is like one of my favorites.
Oh, it's beautiful. But, yeah, it's beautiful.
But I don't want to see it again, you know, but it's scary. I love the movie. It's so scary and weird.
It's a beautiful movie. Yeah, but it's really scary.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's really, well, it's very unsettling because it's like one of those things where it's unsettling in that it's like, it's not like spooky scary and it's not like jump scare scary.
Yeah.
It's really just gets under it's your like skin disturbing.
Psychological, like, yeah. You know, like weird thing, you know, blood coming out of the elevator. You know, it's like that kind of scary. It's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
It's like a bad dream. You
yeah.
know?
It's the real and stuff. The real yeah. stuff that's really disturbing.
Yeah, for sure.
And
for
it's
sure.
like the real terrors.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I love a horror because it's the only time that I'm relaxed.
Really?
Like, well, because in scary movies, like in horror films, it's like, you know something bad is going to happen. But in real life, like, you don't know. Like, something bad is always like, and I think that's like a very Korean thing because it's like, for Koreans, like, it's like, oh, no, Santa. Because like everything like in like my family, like something always is gonna like around the corner, something's gonna like they're always thinking
Koreans
of
are
bad.
Used to Koreans just us as a just historically we're used to horrors, you
like
know,
something terrible
to us. Yeah,
something that like a classic thing of like this is like my family of like my father's and his brother's had to like dig for an outhouse in their home in Korea, and they got in trouble, so they had to like stay up all night to dig the outhouse. So they like they got in like big trouble for my grandfather. So they stay up all night and do it, and they kept digging all night. And they found a body. They found a skeleton.
Oh my gosh!
That was like a soldier who had been deserted, who had deserted from like the army.
Oh my gosh!
And so that they like set up the skeleton like so that they could scare their sisters when their sisters were going to the bathroom. Isn't that fucked up?
That's wild.
Like, I mean, so you could see why they would get in trouble for and have to stay up all night. To like, I mean, that's so
wild.
That's my dad. That's like how bad. I mean, can you imagine? It's like, oh, it's not enough that we found a body. We're going
to
use it to scare our sister, our little sisters who are like 7, 8 years old.
That's so interesting.
Like,
that is fascinating.
Core, like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. It is like I feel like our elders, Korean older generation, they just have a different kind of worldview. You know, like this is nothing like that. But not too long ago, my parents, their home got broken into, and a ton of stuff was taken. Right,
mm-hmm.
and And I, you know, they called my mom called me, like, basically this happened during the day, and my mom called me like late that night, and she was so casual about it. She was just like, oh, hey, our home got broken into. And I was like, oh my God, you know, mm-hmm. And I like rushed over there, and she was just like, it's fine. You know, like, it's no big deal. It's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry, you know? And it was like, they weren't even. And if this has happened before, like when I was a kid, our home got broken into, and I don't know, they're just so, like, not that they're, like, used to, like, horrible things happening all the time, mm-hmm. but they just have this kind of protective layer, you know, whenever, like, bad things happen, where they kind of don't, they don't absorb the, at least, like, from the outside, they don't kind of absorb the tragedy of it, you know.
Or they don't want to alarm you.
That's it too. Yeah. 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 But I'm just like, it's okay. This is like not good. It's mm-hmm. okay to wig out over yeah. this, you know. They're just so chill about it.
It's just like, 괜찮아, 괜찮아.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're just like, you know, they almost want to absorb it. So it's like, it's not as like stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. But I wonder if that's, that kind of makes it worse, because it just, you just kind of like holding things in, you know.
Yeah,
it's just like, you
it
know.
Is, but it's kind of stoic, and it's kind of it's a very Korean attitude to have.
Yeah,
is like you kind of absorb it. It's almost like it is like better luck tomorrow. It's like you absorb it so that you'll have better luck next time.
Right, right. There is that. That's a very Korean way of thinking. It's
yeah.
like yeah, yeah. But, take the hit now, it's fine.
Yeah,
we'll be yeah yeah.
But it's sure. It's kind of immigrant too, and it's kind of like but yeah, definitely it is a, it's one of the, it's a sort of thing, but it's a very Korean kind of thing. I mean, are they I think it's also like, if your kids are successful, you also don't want to be like making a big deal, so that you don't want to stress them out, because you want your kids to continue to be successful or something.
Right, like, right, because that's, yeah.
You don't want like that to take up any sort of headspace.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, are your parents like super excited about your success, and you're the, oh, he's on the door, so he's...
You know, not outwardly. They're not to me. You know, I mean, they're proud, and they tell me that they're proud, which is great.
Yeah.
But they're not like, they're not throwing parties or anything like that. But they also know me, and they know that I'm not like that either. I'm not, you know, into that either. But I will find out from people who know them, like people who work with them or neighbors, or, you know, they'll come up to me and be like, you don't know how much your dad talks about you. You know, he's always showing me photos.
Yeah.
It's like, he is so proud. And I'm like,
I'm
oh my
so
gosh,
excited.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I'm sure they're so excited. Yeah. I mean, because it's like very, again, it's like one of those things when you step out into a career that's completely like different, they get really worried. Like my parents, for me, they were so worried. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, was it basically like for you one day, I'm gonna do this, mm-hmm. and you just did it? And they were like, no,
they were like,
you can't, but you did it anyway, type of thing.
They didn't really understand what it was, and they were so freaked out. And then, you know, but I was so determined to be a comedian, like I couldn't be stopped. And then I wasn't a good student anyway, so it kind of didn't really, like, they didn't know what to do.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
I was just so determined to do my thing. And I had no, like, ideas about, like, oh, I'm not going to ever try to, like, even have anything to fall back on. Like, there was nothing there was nothing like that. No sort of degree so I could teach. There was nothing like that
in
my arsenal to sort of, like, that they could kind of get in there. You know, there was nothing like that.
So while you were pursuing it, like early on, were they kind of constantly telling you that, like, what are you doing? You're not going to make it. Did you have to deal with that as you were kind of starting?
I think so, but I was so absent. Like, I was just so determined and so focused on just doing comedy and out, and writing jokes and doing these like little open mics and driving all over the world, everywhere, just doing shows that I just didn't have any space to listen, and I didn't have any time to worry about that. And then I was just so, you know, at that time, like in the, this is like the late 80s, early 90s, like there was just no opportunity for me to hear anything from them. And, it, you know, like I don't know, like I was just so caught up in wanting to do what I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And by the time that I was actually like open to listening to them, I was already successful.
Right.
So it was kind of like I didn't stop at all.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's I mean, that's why you are who you are.
I just wanted it so much.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a little bit of I was very affected by, you know, their constant doubt, you know, mm-hmm. and I was very like believing that. Yeah, I think they're right. I don't think I'm good enough. You know, I don't know if I'm good. So after college, when I wanted to do it, I kind of just kept myself from going all in. I just kind of worked regular jobs for years. And meanwhile, I was doing all this comedy and acting stuff on just as a hobby on the side. But that's where my heart was, you know? And it wasn't until I was like, well into my mid to later 20s where I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it. And I'm not at home now, so I don't have to hear them constantly telling me I'm not going to make it. I'm just going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I feel like for me at the beginning, it was kind of a conscious doing it behind their back almost, just so that I didn't have to kind of hear them, you know, kind of.
That's
and then
tough.
Eventually when I'd find success, like you say, it's like then they start, oh, you know, they were just worried about me. They just wanted to.
Yeah, they just get so worried. It's just hard. I just didn't have any sort of contact enough to, like, I didn't have any space to let them in to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was like, it just sort of happened the way it did. But yeah, that's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. It's hard. It's anything in the arts is hard to do without support, you know, without like support from your loved ones, you know?
Yeah,
for sure.
But I'm sure that they're so proud now, and it's exciting now, you know, and it's like, it's exciting to just take a moment to like, go, okay, well, you know, you have a million things you can do now. Like, what do you think you want to do? What do you feel like you want, like from Hollywood now, or what do you feel like you want to do?
I don't know. I just, you know, I was just like kind of a working actor, just, you know, trudging through for so long. I still kind of have that mentality a little bit, you know. I just want to keep working, keep having fun. But I feel like I'm in a position now where I could kind of be a little more choosy and a little more maybe even kind of create my own things. To, you know, to do like the things that I always dreamed of doing, you know, and maybe like taking those shots, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm kind of, that's where I'm at right now. Just basically trying to create stuff for myself and for other folks. We started, me and a couple friends started a production company. So we're like focused on making stuff, not just for me, but stuff for me for sure.
Yeah.
Along with stuff for other folks.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So that's been taking up a lot of my time and energies, and we have a few shows that who knows what'll happen, but you know, a few shows we're taking shots.
Yeah,
basically.
I mean, there should be. I mean, and that's like, it's such a weird time. It's like, I want to know like when production will be up again. That's so hard to know. It's like I'm doing some weird stuff. Like, I guess we'll have to like be able to do something sometime.
Yeah. It is a weird time because of this. But yeah, because it's like right now, all the like producing stuff is happening. Like people are pitching shows, people are buying shows, people are writing shows. But it's like all of this is happening without any idea when we'll actually get to make any of this, you know? And because of that, we don't even know if we're going to actually make any of these things, you know, or if they're just going to kind of be developed and then the pandemic's over and then they'll be like, oh, we don't know. We don't want that anymore. You know, it's like, yeah. who knows what's going to happen type of thing. But I mean, it's, you know, it is a good time to feel creative and inspired. It's a good time to do that, you know, to create and make stuff. And
yeah.
If you don't, then it's a good time to chill out too, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. It's yeah. like a kind of thing of like, I feel like it's such a weird thing because, it's almost as if like the one business that you think could never stop, which is entertainment, actually like yeah. stopped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is such a strange thing.
And even like to think about movies, you know, like mm-hmm. I love movies. I love going to the theater. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, I don't even know if that's going to happen anymore. You know, like mm-hmm. if it does, it'll definitely be a long time from now before like you can pack a movie theater, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's all kind of a big question mark.
Yeah. yeah. It's just as a weird thought, but I mean, I'm sure it's going to be able to happen again. But I mean, that's what I love going out to just seeing things with other people, being around other yeah. people.
Yeah, it is tough. I miss being next to people, you yeah. know, like
yeah,
yeah.
I know it's yeah. sad. Yeah, I just have one person. He's like my Valentine. He's like my quarantine. And then I have this little Barker.
Oh my gosh, so cute.
She's a little Barker. But
adorable.
She's a good girl, but she hates Zoom.
Well, that's because your attention, you're giving away your attention and elsewhere.
She hates Zoom. She hates social media.
Yeah.
She's really against streaming. It's like ridiculous.
What kind of breed
she's
is
a,
she?
She's a Chihuahua Dalmatian. I did her wisdom panel.
Uh-huh,
she
uh-huh.
did. She did. But I don't really believe it. I'm like, how is she Dalmatian?
Hey,
I don't really. I don't really.
I don't know.
Are these you 100% Korean?
I mean, I that's what I'm told. That's but what... we don't know. You know.
I mean, that's.
I never did
say.
The. Did you? Have you ever done the like the 23andMe's? Like
yeah,
those
they said that I am 100% Chinese.
Really?
Yeah, that we're actually all Koreans are Chinese, that we're actually all Chinese. But Koreans are, our ethnicity is Chinese, but Koreans is like a nationality. So the, you know.
Right.
The
we all pay.
The haplogroup or whatever that, like our ethnography is Chinese.
Ultimately Chinese. That's interesting.
So we're all ultimately Chinese.
But does that go for all kind of East Asian
yeah.
groups?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like
that's,
that.
That's, I don't know.
But your parents will not agree. I told my parents and they're like, oh no.
Oh no.
No.
You're Korean.
No. No. Do you speak Korean?
No, hardly.
Little,
a little.
A little bit.
Little.
Enough to get to order?
Barely enough to order. And but I can understand, like,
yeah.
pretty well. Not like perfectly, but pretty well. We've been watching, like, a lot of Korean dramas.
Oh,
like,
that's
lately.
Right.
Yeah,
oh, like the Itaewon.
Itaewon class. So good.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret, you got to see it.
Yeah.
If you haven't. But when sometimes I'll like, okay, I'm not going to read the subtitles. I'm just going to listen. And I could be like, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, I understood like, you know, 75% of that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You probably would understand a lot. I bet you would, if you ever listened to like the commentary track of like a movie like Old Boy, you would probably be able to understand a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's like film terms. So you could probably understand. And then also, it's like the more, you know, like you listen to like people talking in Korean, then you go, oh, like, because our generation, they really didn't want us to have an accent.
Yeah.
So they didn't allow us to speak Korean as much.
Yes, yes. I mean, I talked to my parents about that. Or, you know, growing up, they were very much, don't speak English. Mm-hmm. You know, have American friends, you mm-hmm. know, like, and that was really, really big on them. And then, you know, as I got older, and I kind of resented them for it, you know, because I'd meet other Koreans who were like hanging out with Koreans and going, mm-hmm. you know, doing Korean things. And I'd feel like, oh gosh, I try to be a part of those worlds, but felt like kind of like too much of an outsider, you know, and I'd be like, why didn't you teach me, you know, or why didn't you, you know, like enforce that, you know? And it was just like you say, it was just that generation of Korean immigrants that mm-hmm. really, you know, again, worried about their kids and didn't want their kids to be too foreign, I guess.
Well, they wanted us to be Americanized, Americanized, but then you can go not too far, but then it's like you can go to a place of like where... then you feel kind of like your sort of like development is almost stunted. Like I always feel like my development is sort of stunted in one way, but we can like sort of keep growing back the other way.
Right. Do you speak Korean?
I'm trying to get better at it. I did do Rosetta Stone for a while, but then you have to like do this part of Rosetta Stone where you speak to other people at your level online.
Oh, really?
And then I got
really?
Scared.
Oh my gosh, that is scary.
I didn't want to.
That is scary. I mean, I took classes for a while, mm-hmm. And I was amazed at how fast I picked up like kind of the basic level, you know. Mm-hmm. But then once it got to like more complicated stuff, I was just lost. I was so lost.
Yeah, I'm sure that I could probably pick up more, but I just got too scared to speak to the like other students at my level. Yeah, I was like, I got scared.
Have you gone to Korea a lot?
Yes, I do like that. I really enjoy... I've been to Korea a few times, and I really enjoy that. And then when you go, like, you really pick it up.
Right.
You know, definitely... have you been... Have you gone...
You know what? I haven't gone since I was a kid.
Mm.
I've gone once in my whole life, mm-hmm. and I was super young, mm-hmm. and I remember being traumatized by the experience. Mm. I mean, I must have been like 10 years old, mm-hmm. and I was very attached to my mom. My mom didn't go on that trip, you know, so it was like me and my brother and my dad, mm-hmm. And my Korean was so bad. And at the time, it was a different time. And mm-hmm. I remember just getting yelled at a lot by people my Korean was so bad. I mean, it's different now, like, I'm sure. But just getting yelled at a lot. And I remember just like, it was a tough time. It was a tough time. But now it's like, I really want to go back.
Yes.
I just want to see it. It's just such a different place now.
Oh, it's so amazing. It's so fun. Yeah. And then you'll be such a big star. And they'll be so excited. And they'll all be fighting to practice their English.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be so good. And then and everybody stands up. When we go to Korea, everybody stands up. Because when you walk in the room, the elder thing kicks in. So they all stand up.
Right.
So all of the young like actors and stuff, they all like stand up and then they and it's really cute. It's really cute.
Yeah. I remember growing up, like, I used to hate that, like, it's all that stuff. I'd be like, why do people do that? But now it's like, I think
beautiful.
It's so cool.
It's really beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It makes me, it makes me cry because it's just so earnest and it's real and it's really sweet.
It's real and it's like embedded in the culture and that respect
is beautiful.
For people before you, people who've lived and experienced things that you had. I mean, that should be there, you know? That should be a part of our culture.
It's really good.
I'm
doing a tea now.
Yeah.
So where can people find you on the internets, on the, on your, what are your handles?
Oh, gosh. I don't, you know what? I only have Instagram. That's it.
What is that?
It's Randall Park. That's it.
At Randall Park.
Two L's. Yeah. I have a Twitter account, but I don't use it at all.
Well, I'm bowing to you. Thank you, Randall.
So fun talking to you, Margaret. You're bowing back.
Thank you.
That was a thrill. I gotta say, I am such a huge fan of you, and I feel like we all should be bowing to you for everything you've done and continue to do. So thank you.
Thank you. You're the best. Thank you. It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my
sleep. I think I'm coming apart. The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Tracy Levy and original music by Garrison Starr. Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I don't know where to start. Coming out of the dark, coming out of the dark,
coming out of the dark. Yeah, coming out of the dark. Erios. Powered by Acast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.